Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let us know what's going on where you are. In print, Ball State's Festival of First Books was held this week for the 10th year, a two-day event bringing newly published writers to campus to encourage students. Also visiting each year is an editor from a small press or literary journal. There are readings, opportunities to ask questions, and talk about getting published. We'll hear in a bit from Sean Lovelace, who was director this year, but first, Associate Professor Jill Crisman of the English Department, who started the festival 10 years ago.
My name is Jill Crisman. I am a professor of creative writing in the Department of English here at Ball State. I'm a memoirist and an essayist and the founder of the In-Print Festival of First Books.
How did this thing get started?
When I first came here in 2002, I was coming from the University of Minnesota, where I had been in charge of their visiting writers series. And we brought in some incredible people at Minnesota that year, people like W.S. Merwin, Adrienne Rich, Margaret Atwood. And I noticed a troubling trend at our reading, and that was that the undergraduate students weren't coming to the reading. So we were bringing them, Merwin and Rich and Atwood, and they weren't showing up. And so I thought to myself, something's wrong here. We are here as educators to serve these students, and what we are doing, as fantastic as we think it is, isn't what they need. So I started thinking about it, and I proposed then a two-day event that we called at Minnesota First Books. So the basic idea was that on the first night, four writers who had just published their first books within the last year, so just freshly minted, would come and give a reading together. And then the next night, we would gather again for a panel discussion on the process of getting that first book out into the world. So when I came to Ball State in 2002, my mentor, who started the creative writing program here at Ball State, Professor Tom Kuntz, encouraged me to write a grant to start a similar program. I did. And in 2005, we held the first festival here on the Ball State campus. I let Minnesota keep the name First Books, and so we called ours In Print, a festival of first books.
Well, in 10 years, so much has changed in publishing. So the idea of what people need to do to become published has changed, right?
Absolutely. And yet the idea of In Print has stayed fresh because those conversations on the second night at the panel discussion have changed a lot in the 10 years. And if we sat down and watched the videos of them, we would see that we would be hearing more and more about small presses. We would be hearing more about online publishing, all different kinds of publishing, in fact. And I think what hasn't changed is the fact that when we catch these writers so early in their careers, and we're not talking just young people who have just published their first books and they're 25 years old. I once almost had the opportunity to get someone who was in his 70s and had just published his first book. So we look for all kinds of diversity when we invite the in-print authors. But the thing that hasn't changed is the writer's delight in being invited to a place where we have studied their books. We teach the books in our creative writing classes. Our students are prepared to talk about them. One of the most wonderful things about in-print for me is the class visit component. So we study the books and then the authors come into the classrooms and we have intimate, wonderful, detailed conversations about what they have done, both on the page and on their path to publication. And so we have found over the years that these writers are really generous with their time, with their knowledge, with their kind of understanding for the position our students are in now, trying to do the really hard work of getting that first book down and out into the world.
Should folks be looking for a first book or a first article? I mean, a book is such a large work.
Absolutely. In my own class, I focus first not on publication, but on writing. I want my students to learn that we need to be reading all the time. We need to be writing every day. And so my work in the classroom really begins at the level of the sentence and doing that work every day. However, students, of course, are hungry to see what publication looks like. What is this world they might be entering into? So absolutely, publication is not going to begin with the first book. It's going to begin with an essay in a journal or a flash fiction online or a poem somewhere, right? So these are things that are going to happen first, likely, but it's also important for our students to understand what the next step might look like. It's kind of being able to see into the future and see what that process would be like. When I published my first book, it was all a bit of a mystery to me what it was going to be like. Not just the path to publication, but even once I got there, the contract, the publicity, the readings afterwards. What is this thing that we've signed up to do and how do we do it?
Did you ever think about how many hours it took you to do Darkroom, which I think was your first book? That I would think is almost like people who are long distance runners or running every day or something like that. You just have to do it, I guess, right?
Yeah. If I know one single true thing about writing, it's that the work is in the dailiness of it. Flannery O'Connor said we have to practice the habit of our art. And that's what I know to be true. You have to show up and do it every day. So my first book, Darkroom, A Family Exposure, was actually a book that I now know was written really quickly. I wrote that book in about 4 years, which for me is fast. The second book took me a lot longer. Of course, I hadn't had children when I wrote the first book, so that could be a factor. But that's another thing that we talk about at In Print. What are these writers reading, right? How do they balance their daily lives with their writing lives? What does it look like when they compose? You know, all of these things are questions that the students have.
You would think with the internet and with all of the blogging websites out there that anyone who wants to be a writer can find an audience, right? But there must be something more to it. Writing is more than just typing. It's not enough just to push a button and say, here it is online.
Absolutely. Writing is hard work. And just because, as you say, and I have written this on my syllabus from time to time, you can type, that doesn't mean that you have figured out what you've shown up to say, that you have crafted each sentence until it sings, that you have made a piece of art out of experience in some way. And so I am most delighted when the InPrint authors come in and students ask them questions and they give advice like, write every day, writing takes practice. Writing is always hard. It's always hard. I've been doing it now for 20 years professionally, and every time I tackle a new project, it comes with new challenges, no matter how many writerly tools I have in my toolbox. And I want my students to know that part, that in a writing career, there is perseverance.
If they ask me, I could write a book.
English professor Jill Christman, who started the InPrint Festival of First Books at Ball State 10 years ago. She specializes in memoirs and essays. Her books include Darkroom, A Family Exposure, and Borrowed Babies, her first ebook published in September.
And the simple secret of the plot is just to tell them that I love you a lot.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
Talking today about the InPrint Festival, and we caught up with Sean Lovelace, Associate Professor of English, who's Director of Creative Writing for the department and directed the festival this year.
When people find out what you do, I'll bet everyone goes, I've been wanting to write a book, or I could be a writer, or I'm a writer.
They do say that. That's exactly right. It's funny. In some ways, I would say yes, and then in some ways, I'd say no. Because I think what happens in writing is that actually in life, we write things like checks, and we write things sometimes like emails, and we write things. And I think sometimes people think, well, that's writing. I write. And in some ways, I'd say yes, that's true. And actually, that's one of the values of a creative writing degree. Our students, our creative writers, when they leave 4 years here at Ball State, they actually write really well in all kinds of ways, not just creative writing, because writing is sort of writing. You get better at writing by writing.
Well, you're thinking. I mean, you have to organize your thoughts and put it together.
Absolutely. That's right. And that's a whole other argument actually for the creative writing degree is you're actually becoming a really effective communicator, whether that's in the written form or other. But the other side of that is when someone says, well, my dad's done this. My dad's really, really into organic gardening. And I was home one day and he gave the classic, just like you said, I've heard it a little bit more than once. I'm going to write a book about organic gardening. And my reply to that was, that sounds like an excellent idea. Why don't you bring me 5 pages tomorrow? Like, go, you know, go. And that's when writing a book, when you stare at the blank page and suddenly you're like, oh, wait a minute. I'm not probably going to just sit down and write this book. I was actually talking today about Celeste Ng, the novelist at the most recent imprint. And she spent 6 years writing her book. It's her first book. And I really wanted my students to hear that. She went through, you know, 4 drafts over 6 years, and that's not atypical. And I wanted my students really to hear that creative writing is actually a lot of work. And I strongly believe that people come from different backgrounds, and maybe it's my background and other things I've done, or possibly athletics, because I think that's a good analogy. I remember one time I was reading about John McEnroe, and someone asked how soft his hands were. He was really known for his beautiful drop shots. And they were complimenting him in the interview. And he said, I wish you had seen the thousands of drop shots that I had hit last week, you know, instead of saying I have naturally soft hands, right? And so I really believe the creative writing's like that. Creative writing's a lot of hard work, but you do. It's so rewarding because actually, just like in athletics, really, you get better. You get better and better and better and better if you do it, if you practice it and practice it and practice it.
What's it like when people are seeking to publish their first work?
Well, that's a really good question. I think that's actually one of the subtexts for the entire festival. When I, and it's not just myself, I work with my colleagues in creative writing, but when I make decisions about who to invite to this festival, I think diversity. And when I say diversity, it's actually diversity in what you're talking about. Because the real answer to that question is there is no one way to publish a book. And we really try to emphasize this to our students again and again. There are many avenues to get a book published. And so if you look at the imprint festival this year, we had Celeste Ng, who is very much, this is Penguin, this is very much a mainstream book publisher, one of the big houses in New York. Right alongside Celeste Ng is our alum, who we're very proud of, because he was here just a few years ago as a creative writing major, Tyler Gobble. Well, Tyler Gobble's book comes from a very small press. That's a whole different world than Penguin, and that's a whole different way he got that book published. And then if you take someone like Carrie Howley, even though her book's doing really, really well as a larger press book might, it's actually from Saraband Books, which is a relatively small press, a really highly esteemed press, and it's got a great reputation, but it's a relatively small press out of Louisville. And so all three of these authors, and also we bring in an editor, Jody Stanley, so she can talk about how books and stories and things are kind of put out into the world. They all come from really different spaces. So that's a really good question, and I hope that's one of the things the students actually take from the festival. Is that there's actually many, many ways to publish a book. Because I think sometimes people think there is only one way. Like, do you have to go get an agent and do X, Y, or Z? And that answer might be yes, possibly for Celeste Ng, that was the answer. For someone like Tyler Gobble, especially since this is a book of poetry, I can guarantee you there's not an agent involved, right? So his book was birthed another way. So, you know, sometimes a book is birthed from a contest. That's very common in poetry. It can happen in fiction and nonfiction also. Sometimes a book is birthed by an agent. An agent didn't get involved. Sometimes a book is birthed by maybe a press saw a piece that you wrote in a magazine, and they might contact you and actually solicit you to write the book.
And then there are chapbooks.
Right. Yeah, a chapbook is a really interesting genre. In the career of a writer, traditionally, I mean, there's always exceptions, but traditionally what will happen is a writer will get interested in creative writing, whatever genre, or maybe many, many genres. And they usually start by writing shorter pieces, and these pieces are published in literary magazines. That's one of the purposes of literary magazines, is to provide avenues for poems, stories, essays. And a great example at Ball State is The Broken Plate, which is our national undergraduate literary magazine, and the same thing. It publishes poems, it publishes stories, it publishes essays, it publishes photos too, artwork, from all over the nation. And that is traditionally where artists will begin. And that's kind of their apprenticeship in some ways. They're trying to get that first poem, that first story. Now, the next step might be a chapbook. And a chapbook is a smaller collection. So chapbooks are usually 25 to 35 pages. They might be poetry. They might be fiction. They even could be nonfiction. They're smaller print runs, maybe 500 or below. They're usually really beautiful. They're usually handmade, and the press takes a real, you know, kind of pride in how that thing looks. And they're also, what's kind of neat about them is that they've been around forever. You could argue, even in maybe colonial times in the United States, you know, one of the first things King George did is try to get rid of the printing press because he knew that a chapbook is a very effective way to get information across. And of course, we have some very famous Paine, and we have other people, pamphleteers, who took advantage of that. So actually, chapbook, I try to tell students, because sometimes they might see it as a lesser form because it's smaller. I actually think it's a perfectly fine form that's been in history for a long time and has a lot of power. It's just a little bit different than a full book. It's a little bit different in size, but also it's important to say a chapbook's not just a short book. A chapbook is actually a thing to itself.
Professor Sean Lovelace directed this year's In-Print Festival of First Books for the English Department. He's the author of Fog, Gorgeous Stag, They Could No Longer Contain Themselves, and other works.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
Do you ever worry about the future of books? I used to go to sleep every night with be in the process of reading 2, 3, or 4 different books, and I don't do that as much now. Is this my personal failing? We're reading more off of our phones.
Is that what you do? I don't want to ask too much about what you do when you get into bed at night, but
no,
what do
I,
you
I read
do?
News. I read things on my phone and my tablet. And
do you feel as if your attention span has been affected
I'm
by your relationship with electronic gadgets?
I think that it has. If I was honest, I would say that it has.
Yeah. Well, I don't worry about the book because I think there are enough of us, and I think you're one, John. I'm going to help counsel you after this interview, who love them so much. Love the smell of the paper. Love the way you can see how many pages you have left without looking at the little number on the bottom of your iPad. Certainly, I'm not a Luddite. I have an iPad. I have an iPhone. I use these gadgets, and I read things on them. But still, I want to hold a book and read from a book. I don't think the book is going anywhere. In fact, I think in a lot of ways, we're returning to some of the with book arts and the attention to the book as an artifact, I think we might return to some especially beautiful books in the future.
The boomers are getting up in age, and you would think great audience for talking about memoirs.
In my mind, a memoir asks a question. It doesn't have to answer the question. So a memoirist looks back at an event or series of events in her life in order to ask a question so that she might move forward, I think. I think that there has to be a sense of urgency in that question. It has to be a big and important question. And it's not something I think we need to know when we think to ourselves, I need to write a memoir about that time I spent on the fishing boat when I was 12, right? I might not know what pulls me to those memories and that material, but I will have a writerly sense that there's something there that I need now in order to move forward. I think most of the tension in the memoirs I love comes from the friction, the disconnect, the distance between the now narrator and the then self, who becomes a kind of character in the book. And there's an interaction between those two characters, the now narrator and the then self. One thing I say to my students is that an anecdote or a series of anecdotes is not a memoir, right? You need to come to this material, you need to poke at it, you need to think about it, and you need to make meaning of it. And often that meaning comes from finding the patterns. I think as writers, we are responsible for finding patterns in this confusing, complicated world so that we might make sense of it. I think that's our job.
Folks from the English department have been going out to the community, encouraging people to write. If you were talking about this, how might they get started? Should they start just writing the time Uncle Joe fell off the boat, get it down first and then seek to organize it or find those patterns?
You should be a writing teacher, John. Yes, you want to start with something specific, right? We find the most universal in the smallest details. And I think when you're approaching what feels like it might be a big writing project, you know, how do I write the story of my life? That's too big. You need to go smaller. So to go back to your fishing situation, right? Maybe don't even try to write the whole scene of that day fishing. Maybe write what the fish looked like, the first one that you caught as it lay gasping on the dock, right? Write what remains stuck in your brain fibers of that memory as closely as you can, and see what happens. Follow the memory and follow the writing to the next thing.
What's your favorite part of the festival?
One of my favorite parts of InPrint is the class visits. This is when all the writers visit classes to talk about writing and publishing with students who have had the opportunity to study their books. This is good for everybody. It's good for the writers who are excited that someone paid such close attention. It's good for the students. It's good for us as their teachers. We talk about inspiration, the creative process, the daily habit of sitting in the chair and getting work done, what the writers are reading, and on and on. Years ago, after one of these intimate, exciting visits, one of my students came up to me afterwards and said, "This makes what we do in the English department real." And that made me really happy.
So the visiting authors this year include one of your alums, I think.
We are so excited to have Tyler Gobble returning to read from his first book of poems, More Wreck, More Wreck. It came out from Coconut Books in 2014. For me, this is what InPrint is all about. Tyler will get a hero's welcome. When he was a student here, Tyler was active in the writers' community, which is a student writing group that was begun and mentored by Todd McKinney. Thank you, Todd. And he's the kind of student who brings energy and momentum to events like InPrint. So, frankly, one of the things I love about InPrint is that our students are the most enthusiastic students I have ever seen anywhere. It is not unusual for the InPrint Festival to be standing room only. I think that we built the festival, they came, and now the students are doing the building themselves. It's really fantastic. And so I just want to give a shout out both to Tyler and to all the students who make InPrint so great every year.
So 10 years in with InPrint, you're really not running things anymore. We were speaking with Sean Lovelace.
Yeah, that is delightful for me. So I began InPrint and I ran it for the first 5 or 6 years. And then delightfully, it has gained a momentum of its own. Mark Neely, when he took over as Director of Creative Writing, ran the festival for a few years, and now it is in the capable hands of my colleague, Sean Lovelace, and they bring their fresh ideas and enthusiastic energy, and it's really a delight for me to kind of be on the edges watching it all happen at this point.
The weight of all those willing words I carried all along. You wouldn't put your pen to bed. We hadn't found our own.
Professor Jill Chrisman of the English Department, founder of the InPrint Festival of First Books. She specializes in essays and memoir and has some excellent tips for people writing their own story. If you missed that part of our chat or want to hear it again, check out the archive of today's show at indianapublicradio.org. And that is our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Sean Ashcraft. Glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have a suggestion. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Sean Ashcraft. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from Doman's Furniture of Muncie, serving East Central Indiana with home furnishings from Flexsteel, Bassett, and Simmons Beauty Rest. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.